are the Nonprofits. I'm your host, Jeff D. Our co-host is Dennis Lube.
Howdy.
Producer is Russell Glasser, but he ain't here. And our engineer, Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. We are live April 8, 2006, broadcasting from the glorious Dillahunty International Studios. Today's opening music was Roundabout by Yes from their 1973 album Yes Songs. The Atheist Community of Austin is a nonprofit educational organization promoting positive atheism and the separation of church and state. We have weekly meetings, 11:30 a.m., Sunday mornings at Romeo's at 1500 Barton Springs Road, except for the third Sunday of each month when we have our lecture series at 12:30 in the reception room of the Austin History Center, located in downtown Austin at 9th and Guadalupe. The next lecture will be on April 23rd. ACA Happy Hour takes place at Antonio's near Highway 35 and 183 every Thursday night at 7:30. Wait a minute. That's moved. Didn't Happy Hour move?
Yeah, it's at Ninfa's now.
Ninfa's. Look it up. And,
it's Ninfa's, not Ninjas. So.
And that's dead. And, okay, for more information, you can call the ACA voicemail line at area code 512-371-2911 or visit the website at www.atheist-community.org.
Russell says hi.
Russell says hi. Hi, Russell. Is he in the chat room or something?
Yeah.
You can participate in our show by logging into that there chat room when we're broadcasting live every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central. For instructions on how to do that, visit our website at www.nonprofitsradio.com.
Cam.
And, oh my gosh, I've got way too many announcements and listener mails, so I think I just better force my way straight through it. CFI Events Calendar, that's the Center for Inquiry, with which we're not really affiliated. I just
right.
think they're cool. from May 28 to June 4, they're going to have their second cruise, this time to Alaska. The theme of the cruise is planetary ethics, realizing personal enrichment, and saving our earthly habitat. And they got all these speakers and stuff. For information or to make reservations, call CFI Florida at 800-398-7571, email cruise@cfiflorida.org, or visit www.cfitravel.org. On April 12, CFI is hosting a lecture, Is Intelligent Design Falsifiable, at the Middle Tennessee University of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Also on that day, the same day, there's a lecture, Who Was the Historical Jesus, at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. And on the 14th of April, Canada's Mysterious Lake Monsters, lecture at Ontario Institute for Studies in Education in Toronto, Canada. For more information regarding any of those events, contact Thomas Donnelly at tdonnelly, two N's, two L's, at centerforinquiry.net. I mentioned the upcoming ACA lecture. This month's speaker is Randall Ellis, the Director of Government Relations for Legacy Communication Health Services in Houston, Texas. His talk is entitled, As God as My Weapon. And, he says, the far right continues to inject their religious beliefs into our government. The result is not compassion and concern for one's fellow man, but rather policies driven by fear that erode civil rights. How do progressives take an effective stand against the wave of intolerance that has swept across our nation? Again, that lecture will be at the Austin History Center in Austin, Texas. Note that this lecture is actually going to be held on the fourth Sunday of the month, rather than the usual third. An audio recording, by the way, of last month's lecture by our own Matt Dillahunty.
Woo-hoo.
Matt?
Hey.
Yeah. is available online. You can go to www.atheist-community.org/lectures. I believe the way you get to it is you click on Matt's name on the screen.
Yeah, and the slideshow is actually up there too, and that's probably I've heard that from a friend that the audio quality, because this was recorded on a video camera from a ways away, the audio quality is not that good, but you can make it out, and more importantly, you can get the slideshow and kind of work your way through it.
Cool. The 32nd Annual National Convention of American Atheists, it will take place at the Marriott River Center in San Antonio, Texas, April 14 to 16. Wow, that's like next weekend. Hundreds of atheists from throughout the nation will attend this three-day event, which includes a program of informative speakers, leadership training seminars, social events, and much more. There will also be a Sunday morning forum formal debate. For more information, visit www.atheists.org/convention. There will be a Scouting for All rally and protest and candlelight vigil at the Boy Scouts of America's annual national conference. This year, the national conference is being held in Washington, D.C. on May 24 to 26. For more information on that, visit www.scoutingforall.org. The 4th International Rationalist Conference is scheduled to be held December 26 to 29 in New Delhi, India this year. For information on that, visit conference@rationalistinternational.net. If you know of any events or groups or websites that you think deserve mention on our show, please let us know by emailing nonprofits@atheist-community.org.
Wow.
On to the mail.
Oh, boy.
Doug from Utah writes, I have a hypothesis. Oh, a guess, really. I think that the rampant polygamy in our past and continued prolific breeding in Utah have created a stagnant gene pool in which accidental marriages of distant relatives is inevitable. I hope someone with more time than me will actually be able to do the research, as it could relieve a lot of unnecessary suffering. This is a sort of a follow-up to the story I did about the birth defects among polygamist Mormons. Patrick writes, on the latest podcast of your show, Jeff D. mentioned a Barna Group study which found a negative correlation between religiosity and charitable donations. I haven't been able to find any mention of this survey either on the Barna site or on the web in general. Could you provide some links to this information? Well, Patrick, you're darn right you couldn't find it, and that's because I gave you the wrong attribution for that information. It is, I believe, still true, but actually my source is Dan Barker's book, Losing Faith in Faith, and I will quickly read you the relevant portion. A syndicated Los Angeles Times article by George Gallup Jr. and Jim Castelli noted the percentage of all congregations that have selected charity services. The findings are from a study identifying 294,271 congregations of all religious affiliations in the 48 contiguous states issued in 1988 by Independent Sector. It was based on a year-long Gallup study of religious congregations. And here's the info. Homeless shelters, the percentage of congregations that supported, they gave charitable contributions to homeless shelters. 46% of liberal church congregations donated, 36% of moderate, 29% of conservative, and 26% of very conservative. Meal services, liberals, 49%. Moderates, 41%. Conservatives, 35%. Very conservative, 33%. Environmental issues, right? Charitable giving by churches to environmental issues. Liberal congregations, 42% of them gave money. Moderate congregations, 30%. Conservative, 24%. Very conservative,
16%. Wow.
Right off the bat, it seems like worth noting that none of them were over 50%.
Right.
The study listed other things, such as family planning, daycare, civil rights, and the arts, with similar results. This shows that considerably less than half of all churches are involved in any kind of charity. And these figures represent only the number of congregations, not the amount of charity actually practiced by each church. Some churches, I remember, says Dan Barker, once or twice a year, we'll pass a plastic bread for the hungry loaf bank around Sunday school classes, collecting pennies from the children which are supposedly sent to the denominational headquarters, and this allows them to tell Gallup that they are feeding the poor. Certainly, there are a handful of truly charitable churches in America, but does their contribution make up for the tax dollars lost by granting a blank? Well, he's going on to complain. So the point of this, as I believe I said when I mentioned it, is that not only is there not a lot of evidence that being religious makes you more likely to make charitable donations, but the evidence actually indicates that the more serious you are about the religion, that is, the more seriously you take the actual teachings of the religion, the less likely you are to give any charitable donations at all.
Right. And if we're talking like, you know, Christianity, where Christ tells you, you know, help feed the poor, it's the actual, the more religious you are, the less you are, less you're likely to actually follow what your religion says.
The more seriously you take it, the more, the less likely you are to follow it. It's, which is odd, but
yeah.
What,
But when it comes to hating stuff, you'll follow it like...
Yeah, I think it's a matter of shifting priorities. When you, you know, they say, you hear a lot that there's no contradictions in the Bible, but there are contradictions in the Bible, and there are contradictions with regard to doctrine as well, as you know, what's important. Is it more important for me to punish somebody or turn the other cheek, etc.?
Right.
And the more fundamentalist you become, the more you get entrenched into the
punishment angle.
The ones which have less regard for the rights of non-believers and those around you who don't share your opinions.
Mm-hmm. Kurt in Texas writes, I was a little upset earlier this year when I saw that your show was not updating on iTunes and thought the worst. Well, my wife is having the same problem with her radiology teaching conference podcasts for Johns Hopkins, and I was wondering what your trick was to tickle iTunes to update. I would greatly appreciate your help. None of us here in the room are responsible for making the iTunes thing work, which might have something to do with why it doesn't pretty often. But, Kurt, I read your letter on the air so that Martin, who is the guy, as I understand it, who handles our podcasting stuff for us, who listens to the show, will hear your plea, and Martin, contact me, please, and I will get you Kurt's contact information. Also, by the way, Martin, just while I've got your ear out there, dude, we would love to have you as a guest on the show sometime.
Hell yeah.
Zora Thruster writes, I was listening to the March 19 podcast, and there seems to be a misunderstanding of evolution and the theory. One, evolution is a fact, not a theory. Two, Darwin put forward a theory of survival of the fittest, which attempted to explain the fact of evolution. To refer to a theory of evolution, implying that evolution is a theory, falls into the trap set by theists who wish to lump the whole idea of evolution into the theory category. Keep up the good podcasts. I need material for my daily workouts. Okay. One, thank you for the correction. But it's not a lack of understanding on our part. It is a maybe insufficient dedication to being really precise in the way we say things. But thank you for the correction. And, we're glad that you enjoy listening to our show when you're working out.
I think he's actually requesting that we take a second to actually clarify that evolution, the event, the occurrence, is an observable fact, and evolutionary theory, the explanation for how that occurs, is the scientific theory.
That's what I just read. Was that not clear when I read what you wrote?
Yeah, it's not clear. You don't say it in exactly those words.
Oh, evolution is, in fact, a fact. This is interesting. I didn't know this until recently, but, like, the word evolution was already in use before Darwin. It was observed, before Darwin's book came out, it was an observed phenomenon that that needed an explanation. All Darwin did is come up with an explanation that happened not to require any God.
Right.
And that's why all the hoo-ha.
Now, there's another thing. Darwin, I did some research on this when I saw this letter. Darwin never actually said survival of the fittest. In his book, that's not part of what he said. But
are you deigning to correct our muscle-bound friend Zorothruster?
There is a hang on. Darwin does in fact agree with that sentiment.
Okay.
which he
did he not in he, fact he say
he in fact wrote that he agreed with that.
I believe the phrase that Darwin actually used was natural selection. Evolution by natural selection.
Right, right.
The natural selection part was his theory.
Yeah, I just get frustrated by people who latch onto the idea of survival of the fittest and then misrepresent that as some kind of philosophical justification for, like, might makes right.
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 You know,
and it's nothing about
you know, they're not equivalent at all.
They're not.
Okay, moving right along. Chris wrote, there are morons among us, and they reside at a place called Sat7. They are a satellite TV channel that broadcasts Christian shit into the Middle East. They sent a mass mailer that was a fundraiser that had me fuming. I actually got off my lazy ass and wrote to them. The Sat7 URL is www.sat7.org if you want to check these people out, and if you want to give them feedback, the direct link is www.sat7.org/home/send_your_opinion.asp.
Yeah.
Thanks again for a great podcast, says Chris.
Piping religious stuff into the Middle East.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they need. More religion. And different religion. Great. Yeah. Wonderful.
Bruce, this reminds me, you know, there's this ongoing thing about, legislation or changes in cable TV policy that would have people paying individually for every channel.
Right, right.
And the religious broadcasters were against that.
Uh-huh.
Because nobody wants to pay to hear what they say.
Uh-huh.
I'm so sad for them. Of course, not that anybody's paying to listen to what we have to say. Bruce from Ontario says, hi, guys. Wow, love the show. Reinforces my views and expands my perspective. Your most recent one is the first one I've listened to. Love it, love it, love it.
Woohoo!
I live in Canada, so your mention of the Sikh daggers in public schools was particularly cool. I think the public good / safety should trump religious freedom, like your right to swing your fist stops at my nose, your right to practice your religion stops short of carrying a weapon to school.
Yeah.
But I think we got a clarification on that. The ritual things that they carry are like blunt, silly little
wooden things. Yeah, but
still. It's the thought that counts. Janos writes, let me start by mentioning that I'm a big fan. I've downloaded every episode I could since way back before Atheist Network Radio ever existed and vanished. I've turned on several listeners to your show, and I think it's great what you guys do, and your show never fails to entertain me and my friends. What I want to ask, as a tiny favor, is if you could maybe play an opening song by a friend of mine on MySpace. The song is Move On by Jamie Lambert, J-A-Y-M-E Lambert, and his MySpace webpage is www.myspace.com/JamieLambert. Oh, I guess that's it. It should be his first song. Janos, thank you for writing, but I'm going to have to turn you down. Now, we don't mind at all if people want to send suggestions for opening music, because we love listening to new music, but what we can't do is make a practice of saying, if you send that in, we're definitely going to play it. We'll consider it. And in this case, I thought the song was nice, but it really has nothing to do with atheism, as far as I can tell. Not that this morning's tune did either, but we've that's something for me to yell at my fellow hosts of the show about.
Right.
But thank you very much for listening, and all the best to you and your friend. Thanks to all of our listeners who wrote in. We cannot always answer all of our mail on the air, but we do read every little bit of it. And now, finally, news. Matt, would you like to start on news?
Sure, where do we want to start?
I don't know. You pick. I don't care.
Start with the prayer thing?
The prayer thing! No, wait a minute. You have the follow-up to the prayer thing?
I have all kinds of follow-ups to the prayer thing.
Do the prayer thing.
All right. I wrote an article about this as soon as I heard about it. Basically, the Templeton Group had put together a $2.4 million study to determine whether or not prayer was effective They gathered about 1,800 patients who were going to have heart bypass surgery, and divided them into three groups. Group one were being prayed for and knew they were being prayed for, and group two were being prayed for but only knew that it was possible, and group three were not being prayed for by the selected groups but knew that it could be possible. And what they found was there was absolutely no discernible effect on the recovery.
Other than?
Well...
A little statistical anomaly.
There was one minor little hitch in their getup, and that was that the people who were being prayed for and knew they were being prayed for, they had a slightly higher rate of complications.
Now, I just love that this was the Templeton Foundation.
Yeah.
Because I hate those pricks. This Mr. Templeton has made it his business to take his money to fund all this stupid-ass research to try to find, first of all, bad science from the get-go, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got a belief, and he's trying to find evidence that the belief is true
scientifically.
That's what you do in science.
They've got their conclusion.
Yeah, what you do in science is you have an effect that you're trying to explain.
Right.
And that's what you research. You don't start from an assumption that there is an effect. You have an actual effect, and they don't got one. And all that their research is showing is that there isn't an effect for them to do research on.
Well, right, but that's... And to me, the way this study was put together was as good as you could possibly expect from bad science. And okay. It isn't so much that they're setting out to discover
let me
the truth.
I wasn't criticizing their
methodology.
Their methodology. I was just saying that is just a stupid ass way of assigning dollars to research.
Right. But the thing is that they weren't necessarily. They could make the argument that there is a perceived effect, and they wanted to verify if this perceived effect was real.
Fair enough.
And the
they
study
did
says,
verify whether it was real.
The study says
it's
your
not.
Perceived effect is not real. But they had no explanation for why the people who were being prayed for and knew it suffered more complications. But Tracy, a friend of ours from the ACA, had a theory, which I really liked, which was maybe those people were stressed because they knew there was pressure on them to get better for God. And if they died, they would make God look bad.
Well, yes, but... didn't all three groups know it was possible that they might be prayed for? And it's only the ones that were told you're getting prayed for that had the effect?
Yeah. The ones who knew for sure that they were being prayed for.
Now, I imagine the people at the Templeton Foundation were praying that the results would be different. But, you know, sometimes God says no. He answers all your prayers.
No.
And this time
no.
It was
sorry.
No.
Sorry. No. That is a Christian-style excuse to just keep believing in this dumbass shit, even after it has been clearly indicated by an actual study that there's nothing there. But then the spin begins.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
I had concluded that first article by saying, personally, I'm hoping that they simply drop useless studies like this and focus on spending the money to improve the only demonstrably effective treatment for disease, which is medical science and not prayer. But, yeah, the spin begins. And it's no surprise. You've got to figure, okay, they've had these kind of studies in the past, and... If they seem to have shown that prayer was effective, the religionists jump all over it and say, "Ah, we told you, look, prayer is effective." And then when we investigate the studies more, we find out their methodology was flawed or the data was outright faked.
Yeah.
And then that kind of disappears into obscurity. But when the study is clear and shows that there is no effect, it's time for the spin to begin. One guy wrote... I believe the test people who were not sick, they had people who were not sick praying for the sick. What was the motivation of those people who were praying? Did they know those who were sick? Was there any relationship at all between those people who were praying in intercession and those for whom the prayer was directed? And essentially, he's saying that if you don't have a personal relationship with somebody, your prayers are meaningless and hollow. So, excuse number one, the people who were doing the praying didn't have any real compassion for the people who are right. going through the hard fight.
So you can't pay. You can't pray for like world peace.
Yeah.
Or to feed the starving children.
And I'm
in
sure
Africa.
This the same guy.
Interesting.
Because that was perfectly like crazy. I'm sure the same guy has come out every time there is one of those, you know, those prayer days.
Yeah.
And criticize the people praying because you don't have a personal relationship to the class of people that you're praying for, so why are you wasting your time?
Right. Then he comes up with another excuse, which is the idea of selecting people to pray. The people who were selected to pray might not have been true Christians, might not have known how to pray properly. Just another ad hoc excuse for why this might not have worked.
Right.
But his big one was, I would suggest that it was the many prayers of many true believers that prodded medicine to develop things like the artificial heart transplants, and heart bypass surgery.
What? So he's just desperate
for
there to be some real, tangible effect that his religion can take credit for.
Right. When all else fails, respin it so it looks like prayer actually works. Feel free to take credit for scientific progress, because nobody can prove you wrong.
Usurp everything.
Yeah. What a dumbass. I have from the version of the article that I found, Matt, Dr. Harold G. Koenig, director of the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health at the Duke University Medical Center, scary enough that they even have such a thing.
I know.
Who did not take part in the study, said the results did not surprise him. Quote, "There are no scientific grounds to expect a result, and there are no real theological grounds to expect a result either," he said.
Cool.
It's like, what is that? Where is this? Why is there religion if it's not about believing that if you're in the religion, you can get good things to happen.
Yeah.
What the hell is the freaking point?
Well,
it's all about after you're dead.
I kind of had the same questions. It was, if their God's omniscient, why bother praying? Because he already knows what you're going to ask for.
Right.
If he only does what he wants to do, why bother praying? Because he's going to do what he wants to do. If prayer continues to have no better results than we'd expect from chance, why bother praying? If I gave you a six-sided die and said, roll this every day, and if you believe strongly enough, you'll roll a four. And so every time that you roll a four, you credit that to your belief, which strengthens your belief and reinforces it.
Right.
But when you roll something other than a four, let's say you roll a two, the Christian perspective is, well, that's half of a four, I just need to believe a little harder. And a three and a five is nearly a four. So eventually, they end up rolling several fours in a row. But prayer seems to work for those who believe, because they count the hits and ignore the misses, or rationalize the misses. It's a psychological selective myopia.
That's my pet theory of how religion evolved, how it came to be, is just a misunderstanding of statistics and the natural world.
Yeah. Well, the spin doesn't end with, let's rationalize this away. The spin goes on. This guy named Dick Bishop wrote an article. Now, he's writing about the failure of this study, and here's the first two paragraphs that he wrote. In the mid-60s, Madeline Murray O'Hare, an avowed atheist and former member of the American Socialist Party, became a primary instrument in the banning of prayer in public schools. She may be dead and gone, but it appears that the ghost of one of America's most famous atheists is now making her presence felt by saying that prayers for the sick aren't worth the powder to blow them straight to kingdom come. O'Hare founded the Society of Separationists, a group she created after the successful court case that effectively banned prayer recitation in public schools. Outspoken, antagonistic, foul-mouthed, and always the ready contrarian, O'Hare's group eventually was renamed the American Atheist Organization. In 1995, she and her family disappeared. Their mutilated and decomposed bodies were not found until 5 years ago. I often wonder if they prayed for their lives in the last moments before they were murdered. In reality, of course, Madeline Murray O'Hare has nothing to do with the latest bout of idiocy regarding prayer. Then why the fuck did you just spend 2.5 paragraphs telling us about Madeline Murray O'Hare? Anything
to insult us.
Yeah, it's just...
And you know, before he fessed up that it had nothing to do with it, the story he was spinning is that Madeline Murray O'Hare's ghost is floating around this study making the prayers not work.
Yeah. And he considers the Templeton group to be a group with odd beliefs. And so he's trying to tie the Templeton group to atheists.
What the?
Wow.
Do you have no idea who the Templeton group is?
I am not sure. But for those who don't, the Templeton Group sponsors and offers a reward for people who, quote, advance spiritual matters. It's the largest annual monetary prize to an individual, and it's $1.4 million. They also have a $50,000 Epiphany Prize for encouraging film and television producers to create movies and programs which increase the understanding and love of God. Another $50,000 prize for moral and spiritual values within film and television. And five $100,000 prizes to entrepreneurs over 60 who demonstrate innovation and altruism. Yeah.
They're making it their business to try to... they're going to try to prove that there's something to their dumbass religion, and if they can't do that, they're going to make it their business to just get it promoted anyway.
Now, is there something logically wrong with the idea of being of striving to be so altruistic that you'll win that prize?
Yeah, I thought of that earlier too. The only good thing that I can say about some of this spin is that. Because this study failed so utterly, and a handful of vocal people are now coming out and saying, studies like this shouldn't have been done, you can't test prayer that way, maybe we won't see money wasted on bullshit like this again.
No.
I doubt it, but, you know.
But, and in fact, Dr. Harold Koenig finished up his comments by saying, science is not designed to study the supernatural. No. That is bull. Science can study freaking anything that you can define and that causes any observable effects.
Right.
If it happens to be a supernatural thing that causes the observable effects, science can at least figure out there's an effect there that cannot be attributed to any known natural thing. And that's what studies like this are all about. As I said, I don't criticize their methodology. I just think they shouldn't be wasting money on this in the first place.
I don't think I can agree
except
with
that. You don't think you can agree with what I just said?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's argue.
Because I don't think science can say that this effect is not due to a natural.
Oh, did I not say known natural effects?
Ah, okay. Maybe you did.
If it happens to be supernatural, it doesn't matter. Science can still detect it, as long as it produces an effect.
Right.
We might not necessarily know what it is.
We may not be able to know it's... Right. Yeah, natural...
Well, there's two issues. Is there actually an effect which we can measure and test?
Right.
And the second question is, can we determine what the source of that effect is? And... I think that religionists are always going to be able to have that way out of, okay, we found no effects of this, yeah, but we still see it. And then if you actually find an effect but are unable to properly actually identify a cause, you're finding those little pinhole gaps in evolutionary theory, for example, they're just going to keep exploiting any gap and any excuse they can to say, well, you don't know for sure, or you don't know absolutely.
Yeah,
you're right.
At that point, they're just obviously full of shit.
Yeah. Well, obvious to some.
They can say whatever they want, but
there's
nothing there.
Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know where we are. Matt, are you done with your news story?
I screwed the poop.
Okay. Dennis, it's your turn.
Uh-oh.
Do a news.
Okay. How about the Dinosaur Museum?
Which dinosaur museum is that, Dennis?
Well, let's see. It's the one that doesn't have the building permits.
Huh?
It may have been built with heavenly intentions, but a judge has ruled that the creationism theme park known as Dinosaur Adventureland still must obey earthly laws. Escambia County authorities this week locked up a museum building at the theme park on North Palafox Street in Pensacola after Circuit Judge Michael Allen ruled the owners were in contempt of court. Owners of the park, which shows how dinosaurs may have roamed the earth just a few thousand years ago, did not obtain a building permit before constructing the building in 2002. They have argued in and out of court that it violates their deeply held religious beliefs and that the church-run facility does not have to obtain permits.
Wow!
Right. We're above the law. After almost 4 years of litigation, the judge disagreed and said the county has the ability to close the building until the owners comply with regulations. The judge also fined two church leaders $500 each per day for every day the building is used or occupied. If church officials continue to refuse to comply with local ordinance, the judge may decide that the building can be razed, Allen's ruling said. County commissioners showed no sympathy to members of the Creation Science Evangelism Ministry who spoke out Thursday night at a commission's meeting about the county's actions. Scripture also says, render unto Caesar what Caesar demands, and right now Caesar demands a building permit, County Commissioner Chairman Mike Whitehead said. I would have loved to have been there just to hear that one line.
Wow.
A building permit and inspection by county authorities is vital to ensuring the theme park is safe for the thousands of people who reportedly visit the park and museum every year. Church leader Kent Hovind vowed to appeal the case. We will continue our legal fight, Hovind said
he's
Thursday.
He's got some kind of crazy Australian accent or something, doesn't
he?
Hovind?
Is that Hovind or Ken Ham?
Hovind. Kent
Hovind. This is Hovind.
This is pure religious persecution.
They're persecuting our building full of dinosaurs, Bruce.
Actually, that wasn't said by Hovind. Okay.
Oh, crap.
This is pure religious persecution, said Glenn Stahl, who works closely with Hovind on legal issues. It's a purely legal persecution, you idiots.
That you can't, to see, this is, once again, this is that attitude, right? They decided that somehow, because they're religious, they don't have to,
because they don't have
rules,
to pay
like,
taxes.
For example, paying taxes, right?
Right.
And so,
give them an inch.
You try to enforce the rules on them that they have given themselves without asking. Mm-hmm. They've just taken the freedom not to follow those rules. They call that persecution.
Right.
This has got to freaking stop.
Legal questions are nothing new for Dinosaur Adventureland.
Uh-oh.
And the leaders of the church group that operate it. In 2004, the Internal Revenue Service raided Hovind's home and businesses. Agents said Hovind had failed to pay taxes. That case is pending, and federal attorneys declined to comment about it. While the building permit case was in court, the ownership of the theme park was transferred to Stahl, who resides in Washington State, according to court papers. Stahl has been investigated at least twice by federal authorities, court records show. Last year, the U.S. attorney in Seattle filed a lawsuit against Stahl, charging him with promoting a scheme encouraging people to avoid paying taxes by claiming to be religious entities, according to news reports.
Oh, man!
A federal judge ruled against Stahl, ordering them to stop the practices. Stahl said Thursday that he doesn't recognize the ruling because he was never properly served with court papers. These people just don't get
it. I'm afraid I'm on the line here to right at the edge of having to write them off as actual religious people and just put them down as con artists.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is whether they realize what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
But to answer your other question, no, he's not the one with the Australian accent. Kent Hovind right there is Dr. Dino, who is from Peoria and lives in Pensacola.
Oh.
It's Ken Ham, who is the Answers in Genesis guy,
okay,
the biblical literalist from Australia.
Here's my theory.
Yeah?
They think
all brother sources are much more very small at one end.
Yes.
Sorry.
No. No, I think this will resolve that little conundrum you had.
Oh, I had a conundrum? What conundrum was my conundrum?
Whether they're actually...
Oh, yes.
They are deeply religious.
Are they?
And thus they think themselves special. And thus they take these liberties.
Yeah, but...
I think they think they're perfectly justified.
Yeah, but they're
because they're religious.
But they're also selling like courses on how to get around paying your taxes by claiming that you're a religious guy, which is nothing but a scam.
I think they'd sell that only to other Christians.
That may be, but not every Christian is a...
They don't think Christians should have
to pay religion,
taxes.
Is a religion
business.
They
don't business. Think any Christian should have to pay taxes.
But if that's the case, why don't they just give that away? they're charging money for it. It just looks like it. Look, that well, looks to me like an intentional scam.
Well,
and not.
I'm not going to say they're not true Christians.
Okay.
Yeah, there's.
Yeah, you're right that we don't have any business making that distinction anyway.
If they say they're Christians. They're Christians.
Yeah.
Unless somebody can provide an objective test as to what's a real Christian and what's not.
Yeah.
Can we get the Templeton Group to sponsor a $2.4 million study into who's a real Christian?
Are they true Christians?
I think I might write them a letter. Let me go around and interview people and find out what true Christians are. Can I have $2.4 million, please? Thank you.
I'd interview a lot of assholes for that. That'd be great.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to do a news.
So, yeah, do a news. Do the news.
New figures released last month by the nation's Roman Catholic bishops show the unrelenting toll of the clergy sex abuse crisis. 783 new credible claims last year.
Whoa!
Most of which date back decades, and costs of nearly $467 million.
That's about two people a day coming forward to say that they got raped
and
by a priest.
And we have to assume that this is a tip of an iceberg, really. I mean,
The thing is that these figures were released by the nation's Roman Catholic bishops, the very people who are responsible for hiding this stuff for decades in the first place. And so I am immediately skeptical when I read things like, oh, only 783, or most of them dating back decades.
Or which ones are credible or not.
And which ones are credible. Well, yeah, it's where the 783 comes into question. Mm-hmm. While researchers who analyzed 50 years of data on molestation claims concluded the number of new cases is declining, number of new cases here. Now, see, here I'm skeptical the other way, because new cases just means we heard about it. Well, yeah, we got a big backlog of cases to hear about that did come out all in one big, avalanche recently. That's not a big surprise if the number of new cases that go to trial, right, or that become public, that could dwindle. The real question is, how many new cases are actually starting because priests are molesting children? Like this year.
Right. Like right now.
The abuse problem was already known to have cost dioceses more than $1 billion since 1950. Including some expenses paid last year.
Tiny fraction of their wealth.
Still, Teresa Kettelkamp, director of the Bishop's Office of Child and Youth Protection. The Bishop's Office of Child and Youth Protection.
Uh-huh. The Wolf Office of Protection.
Excuse me, Teresa, would you please send in the next child? I want to protect him now. Said the total abuse-related expenses shelled out in 2005 were likely the largest ever for a single year. And this is interesting, that according to this story, the number of new cases they're hearing about is tapering off, but the amount they're having to shell out is the largest ever.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? That means the amount it's costing the Catholic Church per abuse case is skyrocketing.
I guess
is what that would have to mean.
Yeah.
I find that interesting. And good thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
The total number of accusations against Catholic clergy now stands at more than 12,000 since 1950.
Holy crap.
The latest statistics were released as part of the third audit U.S. Bishops commissioned.
Wow.
Third audit?
12,000.
They commissioned to restore trust in their leadership after abuse allegations soared in 2000. Auditors found that 88.5% of dioceses had put in place full safeguards for children required by the bishop's reforms.
Yeah, sure.
So, now, safeguard. Let's just deconstruct this sentence. There are some reforms the bishops asked for. Mm-hmm. We don't know what those are.
Right.
We just know that the bishops are the same asswipes who disguised, hid, brushed under the carpet mm-hmm. all these abuses.
For decades.
So they came up with their set of safeguards that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the dioceses, 88.5%, that means 11.5% didn't even implement those.
Right.
Right? Didn't even implement the safeguards requested by the very guys responsible for this abuse in the first place, right? For the continuation of the abuse,
right?
In the first place, 11.5% of them didn't even live up to these abuses, to these safeguards that we don't know what they are. But why on earth would we expect that they would be significant? However, advocates for victims called the audit inadequate. And by the way,
yeah.
the auditors who determined that 88.5% of the dioceses had followed the safeguards work for the bishops who came up with the safeguards and were the guys who were responsible for the perpetuation of the abuse for decades.
So they don't understand conflict of interest either.
No.
Cool.
Advocates for victims called the audit inadequate, since 104 of the 195 American dioceses conducted a self-audit. So these auditors only hit about a third of the dioceses. The other ones were just asked, do you comply or don't you?
Sure.
In previous years, teams from the Gavin Group, a private firm led by former FBI agent William Gavin, had conducted on-site audits in all participating dioceses. Once again, we don't know how many of them participated back
right.
when they were doing that. Speaking at a news conference, Gavin and a key church official agreed with the critics that the new report didn't capture the full picture. They pointed to the recent failure of the Archdiocese of Chicago to remove an accused priest from church work for 4 months until he was criminally charged. The Archdiocese was found to be in full compliance in the 2005 audit, but an outside investigator hired by Chicago Cardinal Francis George to look into the priest's case found a string of stunning lapses by Archdiocesan staff that left children at risk. So it's just going on and on and on.
Yeah.
Every time that there's something done that it looks like maybe this is significant, every time, read the actual words, read what is actually said, they're always, always backing off from actually doing their freaking job, which you'd think would be protecting the little children in their religion from being sexually molested by the people operating their stupid religion. Ooh.
Yep.
So.
What else we got?
Matt, what do you got?
I got a joke from the chat room.
Okay, let's have a joke.
Cool.
Clairvoyant. About time those people contributed something.
Yeah. I just found this pretty funny. Clairvoyant Marshmallow said, my little brother, 8th grade, told me a funny story the other day. His teacher was saying something about Palestine, and she was like, haven't any of you read the Bible? This was a city in the Bible. Don't you know what that means? And his friend said, that it never happened?
Oh!
And
that's good.
Palestine is not a city.
No.
Palestine is a country. But,
yeah.
All right, Dennis, news.
Well, got my last story then. There's they're going to start collecting animals, I guess.
What?
Well, some people think he's crazy. His wife's not exactly thrilled either. But like the biblical Noah, Dutchman Johan Huibers is steadfast in his mission. He's building an enormous working replica of Noah's Ark as a testament to his faith in the literal truth of the Bible. Townsfolk in Schagen, 45 kilometers north of Amsterdam, frequently stop by to wave hello or just gawk at the huge wooden ship that is nearing completion in the town's small harbor. Johan's Ark is calibrated to be able to pass narrowly under every bridge and through every sluice along his planned sailing route. Though the interior waters of the Netherlands to the through the interior waters of the Netherlands to the country's big cities. Reckoning by the old biblical measurements, the ark is roughly 150 cubits long by 30 cubits high and 20 cubits wide. That's nearly 70 meters long, 13.5 meters high, and 9.5 meters wide. As described in Genesis, Noah used gopher wood to build his ark. Johan's ark is constructed with American cedar and Norwegian pine on top of a seaworthy steel hull.
Well, and he's collecting animals?
Well,
is he like a crazy cat lady, except he's a crazy two of every kind guy?
Let you decide.
Okay.
I'll report, you'll decide. While spectacular, it holds only about a fifth as many cubic cubits, what a measurement, as Noah's would have, according to most biblical scholars. And just think, Noah did it alone and without modern tools. It's
and without
unimaginable,
that, and
no?
And without that steel hull.
Yes. Unimaginable,
said,
no? Yes, it is unimaginable.
Who says it's unimaginable? The guy?
Yeah. It's unimaginable, isn't it? I go, well,
dude,
it's unrealistic, yeah.
You're a doofus.
Says Huibers, a energetic 47-year-old contractor. According to Genesis, Noah kept 7 pairs of most domesticated animals and 1 breeding pair of all other creatures, plus his wife, 3 sons, and 3 daughters-in-law together on the same boat for almost a year, while all the world was submerged by an enormous flood. Huibers' vision is more modest. He plans to stock his ark with a collection of farmyard animals such as horses, lambs, chickens, and rabbits, plus an exhibition on more exotic creatures. He hopes to set sail in September, displaying the ark as a combination of religious monument, museum, and petting zoo. This will speak very much to children, because it will give them something tangible to see that Noah's ark really existed, Huibers says.
No, dude! How does you making one prove that it really existed?
They'll hear the creak of the wood, the smell of the dung. That's the end of the story.
Well,
the smell of the dung. Yes, they'll smell some dung, I'm pretty sure.
Well, as long as he's making sure that children have that all-important opportunity to smell dung.
Yep.
Wow. Speaking of children.
Children?
Yeah.
We must protect the children.
When Dina Schlosser told a 911 operator that she had just cut off her 10-month-old baby's arms, she did so calmly with a gospel song playing in the background.
Right.
On Friday, a judge found her not guilty by reason of insanity, sending her to a state mental hospital until she is no longer deemed a threat to herself or others.
Well, why did she cut off the arms of her child?
Because God and or Jesus told her to.
But that's not insane then, right?
You know what I find especially ironic?
What?
Is that it's likely that in this mental institution she's being sent to, that her sentence will be reduced, i.e. her fitness to be released will be judged, you know, more fit. If she shows a lot of signs of religiosity.
Oh, let's hope not.
Yeah. That's, does she have any other kids remaining?
Yes. two older daughters.
Well, then I'd say that she represents a threat to society as long as she's still religious and has other kids.
Yeah.
Keep that bitch in jail, in an asylum.
But...
Or at least let those kids grow up to the point where they don't have to worry about having mommy cut them apart.
Are you supposed to do it?
Yeah. In issuing the verdict, Judge Chris Oldner said Schlosser had met the legal standard for insanity, but did not elaborate. And that's, I think, the question.
Well, I mean, Abraham is lauded as this wonderfully devout follower, and God told him to go up there and kill his kid.
Yeah.
And, you know,
this time God forgot to say, you know, just kidding.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's hot. But apparently.
So apparently if people do what God tells them, they're insane.
Well, okay, here's the ironic comment.
Okay.
Is,
oh, yeah?
It appears that as far as the judge is concerned, he can decide, his idea of what God's intentions are more valid than hers. That appears to be the only standard on which you could judge a thing like this, unless you take the further step of saying, this religion is just frickin' crazy.
Right. Insane.
The case hinged on whether Schlosser was unable to grasp the wrongness of the crime. The judge relied on evidence he had heard during the first trial. Among other things, psychiatrists said Schlosser suffered severe mood swings and religious hallucinations.
But if God is the author of morality...
i.e. visions!
Right.
If God is the author of morality, how can you say that this is wrong if God told her to do it?
Exactly.
I think...
She did good.
Everybody who says that God is telling them to do something, just to make it easy on all of us, has to actually prove that God told them to do that.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
And if they can't, then they're fucking insane. And that goes right up to the top and the man in the Oval Office.
I like that solution. That seems like a fair solution. If you think God's talking to you and you want it taken seriously, prove that it happened. Prove that God exists. Prove that he said the things to you that you claim he said. And if you can't do that, you are nuts.
Sounds good. Jeez.
Yeah.
Marshmallow just posted another funny, which is a Carlin quote. George Carlin. How come God never tells anyone to take a shit in a salad bar?
Oh, does he not now? How do we know that? Maybe those people just aren't talking. In another similar Texas case, a jury recently rejected an insanity defense in 2002 from Andrea Yates, the Houston mother who drowned her 5 children in a bathtub. She won a new trial on appeal and will again use an insanity defense in June.
I bet I know why.
In 2004 in East Texas, why is this all happening in freaking Texas? Deanna Laney was acquitted by reason of insanity after killing her 6 and 8 year old sons by bashing their skulls with rocks.
That's biblical.
But she's blessed, because blessed are they who take their young ones and bash their heads against rocks.
I know why. I know why that one insanity plea was rejected. See, the others did things which are biblically sound.
That's why?
The woman who drowned her kid, God promised he wouldn't ever drown, you know, the whole earth again. So they're just going to dismiss the drowning as God couldn't possibly have ordered you to do that. Therefore, we're not going to accept your insanity defense.
That's not holding up, man.
Well, you know.
You're only insane.
Good try.
I can't be funny all the time.
Grr. Yeah.
I'm losing my grip. See, it used to be I could rationalize like a Christian, but I've gotten so far away from it now that I can't quite rationalize as well as I used to be able to.
On the ride over here, Dennis had to pick me up because my car's in the shop. All of you, anyone out here who want to pray for my car, don't bother. But
That'll only make it worse.
Dennis, that's right. We'll have complications, and if it does, it's your fault. Driving over here, Dennis was telling me about the news story of the...
Don't waste... What?
The one that you couldn't even describe.
You're
what
right,
they were
right.
Which
the,
one was
the,
that?
It was some guy offering apologetics for, like, cancer.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
One of the lines in the story was, don't waste your cancer. Because it is a, you know, God, it's part of God's plan. If you
yes.
have cancer, it's part of God's plan that you have cancer or something.
Christians are instructed to thank God in all things, good and bad.
Right.
And that this, and cancer and those bad things that happen, whether they be...
Praise God for my cancer.
Whether they be trials that God is putting you through
right.
or a punishment for something, they are opportunities for you to continue to tell everybody about Jeebus.
But I brought this up because you were just saying, Matt, that you're finding it more and more difficult to get back into that mindset and rattle off the justifications, right?
Yeah.
Dennis was literally unable to bring himself to describe the justification used in the sermon. You still haven't.
When I was reading...
You still have not.
Right. Well, I can agree with his. I rattled it off and I went, yeah, that was it. But when I'm away from it, no, it doesn't make any sense, and I can't reconstruct the argument.
Yeah,
because
it's a very peculiar mindset. I saw a quote the other day where somebody was saying that
don't waste your cancer.
I saw a quote the other day where somebody was saying that being a slave for Christ is the ultimate freedom.
Yeah.
I mean, my mother died of cancer.
So why was 1984 written about oppressive governments instead of religions? These religions are all about that frickin' shit. The good is evil, up is down, left is right, death is life.
Freedom is slavery. Slavery is freedom, rather.
Okay. Matt, do you have another news? Or do we have anything further to say about Dina Schlosser?
Well, one of the talking about these rationalizations still, there's, you know, that idea of praising God and thanking God for your cancer, for example. If that's what they truly believe, then why don't they extend that rationalization to thank God for atheists and abortionists and secular humanists?
Sometimes they'll do that just to our faces just to piss us off.
Yeah. Hey, if you're going to thank God in all things, go home, shut the fuck up, and thank him. You don't have to come talk to me.
Right. Agreed. Do you have another news story there, Matt? I know you got something.
Well, have we done the fossil fish, or you were going to do the fossil fish?
No, why don't you go ahead?
Well, I got others. I've got the fatwa against statues.
Let's do fatwa.
In Cairo, a fatwa issued by Egypt's top religious authority, which forbids the display of statues, has art lovers fearing it. Fearing that it could be used by Islamic extremists as an excuse to destroy Egypt's historical heritage. I can't
now,
talk.
Okay. First of all, what exactly is a fatwa?
It's an order from the church.
I'm only used to that being used in the sense of a holy war.
No, fatwa is
any kind of order from the church.
It's a declaration from
temple
an Islamic
temples, right?
Priest.
Yeah.
That basically declares something to be haram or forbidden.
And if it's forbidden, then you're supposed to do what?
You're not allowed to do it.
Okay.
There's also
and if somebody else is doing it, then what?
I don't know. There may be a justification to actually kill them in some cases.
Yeah.
There are fatwas that call for people's death. But anyway, Egypt's Grand Mufti Ali Goma, the country's top Islamic jurist, issued the religious edict which declared as un-Islamic the exhibition of statues in homes, basing the decision on texts in the Hadith. Intellectuals and artists argue that the decree represents a setback for art, a mainstay of the multi-billion dollar tourist industry,
mm-hmm.
and would deal a blow to the country's fledgling sculptural business.
Fledgling?
Sculptural business? What is that?
Sculpture business.
There's a sculpture business in... Yep.
Evidently, you know, you get those mini sphinxes that you take home.
Well, that's like God. I would think they'd be a well-entrenched, mature industry over there.
Well, they've been held back a lot by the religion, apparently.
I guess.
The fatwa did not specifically mention statues in museums or public places, but it condemned sculptors and their work.
Oh, shit.
Boy.
Gama had pointed to a passage from the Hadith that states, sculptors would be tormented most on Judgment Day. Saying
sculptors?
That, yeah.
Okay, what is their freaking problem?
Hey, you know, it's not infidels, it's sculptors. Sculptors are going to be tormented the most on Judgment Day.
Did they do a survey there rating, like, how trustworthy the people in that country thought the groups were and rated sculptors below atheists?
does that count for, like, 3D modeling? Because I do a bunch of 3D modeling.
Well,
is that
you're going to be tormented most.
It's virtual sculpting.
I know.
You're
going to
be tormented virtually.
The only exception they listed was children's toys. So we could make like a little Muhammad doll.
And sell it as a children's toy.
No.
With karate chop action.
Put a bomb in the turban. Here. Here's your new toy. It's okay.
No, that's probably already covered by the prohibitions against any depictions of the Prophet, man.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
It's already covered.
Sure.
Wow, well, that's just nuts. So,
crazy. Sculptors.
Wow, that's one I don't understand.
We're deserving of such torture. That's amazing.
I can understand, you know, even weird shit like, you know, the prohibition against shellfish in Judaism, right? Can see that coming from some culture where they just don't like to eat that stuff, and they see other people eating it, and it grosses them out, and they call it a sin, right? But I've never heard of Jews, like, storming a fishery in order to string up the people that collect shellfish or sell shellfish. Why, and I can understand that as a cultural thing, but, like, statues? Why that in particular?
Because you can interpret the writings any way you like.
But somebody wrote that in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good question, too.
I mean, the quote that Matt just read, it seems
maybe,
pretty clear.
Maybe sculptors killed his family.
You...
Sculptor killed my... Her statue fell over on my only brother. No, I hate sculptors forever. Why do you hate sculptors? Sculptors destroyed my village. What the hell? They don't need a reason. They're irrational.
Huh. But you'd think it came from somewhere. It wasn't like... But maybe not.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Maybe not.
He doesn't like sculptors because he can't control all sculptors to sculpt just what he wants.
I know, so there's a thing about
graven images?
Yeah, graven images in
which later becomes what? Molten images?
Right. But they're talking specifically about, you know, depicting religious entities in three dimensions. I don't know. Maybe that's because once you got one of those, you can draw a mustache on it.
Could be.
As long as it's just an idea, it's harder to lampoon it. I don't know.
It's weird.
I'm casting about here for some kind of understanding.
I got no.
You got nothing?
I got nothing.
All righty. I guess it's down to me then to do.
Yeah. What do you got? What
do another
you got?
News. Wow, I kind of want to go on with some of these other things. Okay. So. Missing link fossils awe scientists.
Oh, yeah.
Scientists are hailing a set of newfound fossils as a missing link that documents one of evolution's most spectacular transitions, the shift from water to land.
Woohoo!
They found fossil mudskippers? Is that what it is?
That's right.
The fossils come from a fierce fish with bones in its fins, which gave it enough strength to walk on land a bit, say researchers. Pardon me. Human comprehension of the history of life on Earth. Human comprehension of the history of life on Earth has taken a major leap forward, said H. Richard Lane, director of the Sedimentary Geology and Paleontology at the U.S. National Science Foundation in Arlington, Virginia, which helped fund the research. Dubbed Tiktaalik Rosier. Tiktaalik Rosier. Tiktaalik Rosier.
Yeah, that's good.
That's very musical. The species blurs the boundary between fish and land-living animals, said the University of Chicago's Neil Shubin, co-leader of the research team. The group published its findings in two papers in the April 6th issue of the research journal Nature. Tiktaalik was a predator with sharp teeth, a crocodile-like head, and a flattened body that seems to have lived in shallow streams, scientists said. Well-preserved fossils from several specimens indicated a length from 4 to 9 feet long.
Yeah, it's a big sucker.
About 375 million years ago, it had a skull, neck, ribs, and part of a fin like the earliest limbed animals, but also fins, scales, and jaws like a fish, the researchers said. The fossils, scientists agreed, show how the fish's pectoral fins, those behind the head, evolved into the limbs of tetrapods, or four-limbed animals. The fins contained bones that correspond to the upper arm, forearm, and primitive parts of the hand of land-living animals, they explained. The skeleton indicates that it could support its body under the force of gravity, whether in very shallow water or on land, said Farish Jenkins of Harvard University and a co-author of the papers describing the research. This represents a critical early phase in the evolution of all limbed animals.
Neat.
Well, that's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
You know, though, every time, and this is obviously a significant find in the missing link category, but anytime you find a transitional fossil, of course, you have the anti-evolutionists come in and say, well, now that just leaves
two more
gaps, one on either side where you don't have a transition.
Mm-hmm.
So I have the comments.
So the creationists are crowing, yay, we discovered two new gaps.
Yeah, two new gaps.
By the way, for
they're looking at the negative space.
For our Canadian listener, Bruce, see, now he should have been Australian.
Good eye, Bruce.
These fossils were found on Ellesmere Island, which is the Canadian Arctic.
Oh, wow.
And the interesting thing about the name, rather than using the traditional Latin or Greek to name the fossil, the scientist said, they asked local Nunavut residents, that's Eskimos, to suggest a name. Community elders suggested Tiktaalik, meaning large shallow water fish in the Inuktitut language.
Inuktitut.
The second part of the name, Rosier, honors someone whose name is being kept under wraps because he or she helped fund the project on condition of anonymity.
Huh.
So
he's a Rosicrucian.
That's bizarre.
Tiktaalik Bob Johnson.
Tiktaalik John Doe.
So the Discovery Institute's already commented on this find.
Yeah?
Yeah, Dembski.
Oh, God, I'm sure.
Right, and?
This latest fossil find poses no threat to intelligent design. Intelligent design does not so much challenge whether evolution occurred, but how it occurred. In particular, it questions whether purposeless material processes, as opposed to intelligence, can create biological complexity and diversity. Even though this find does not challenge intelligent design, there may be good reason to be skeptical about it. These fish are not necessarily intermediates, explains Discovery Institute scientists.
What?
Tiktaalik Rosier is one of a set of lobe-finned fishes that include very curious mosaics. These fishes have advanced fully formed characteristics of several different groups. They are not intermediates. Now, see, they've gone from, we don't have a problem with this, to they're not necessarily intermediates, to they are not intermediates in the sense that they have half fish, half tetrapod characteristics.
Except that we just read that they did.
Rather, they have a combination of tetrapod-like features and fish-like features. And evidently Dembski has something that's like intelligence.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And these are, this is a curious mosaic.
So,
now are mosaics allowed in Muslim countries, or is it just, if you made a curious mosaic of the prophet, would that be okay?
Probably not. It would have to be prophet-like things.
He has prophet-like features. But he's not the prophet.
He's not a prophet.
He's not a transitional form between a prophet and a non-prophet. And we're the non-prophet.
And we're the non-prophets. But evolutionary theory could, I think, unless I'm completely wrong here, predict the existence of this creature.
Well, yeah, the existence of this creature has been predicted.
Okay,
we've known for years that there needed to be a thing like that.
What the fuck does Dembski have that predicts the existence of this creature?
He has something which is theory-like.
Yeah.
Sure, and he practices something that's science-like.
Right. It's a mosaic.
Yes, he has a curious mosaic of religion-like beliefs and science-like beliefs.
But this is the same guy who said evolutionary theory is going to be dead in 10 years.
Right. When did he say that?
A week ago.
Oh.
Yeah, right before they found the missing link. Uh-huh. Yeah, he said that evolutionary theory would be dead in 10 years.
He's a delusional.
There are some cool pictures of the actual fossils that you can find online.
Yeah.
There was also recently there was an eclipse.
Yes.
And there was a cool photo that I saw taken from the International Space Station of the big old shadow on the Earth. Did you see that photo?
Yeah, it was cool.
We should have links, but we don't.
And then there's this weird little technological development.
Which one is that?
With the viruses.
Oh, yeah.
That would... Scientists have apparently developed viruses, I guess genetically engineered them?
I don't know how. Presumably.
That coat themselves with metal.
Uh-huh.
Metals. And line themselves up end to end.
Uh-huh.
Making an anode.
Excuse me?
An electrical anode. Making something that could be used as the anode in a battery.
Oh.
And so they're
thinking
that...
Is that like a wire?
It's more than that, but yeah.
Okay.
And
there's some neat pictures of this, too. I saw those.
Oh, really?
Well.
I didn't see the pictures.
Yes. It actually... They don't make convenient little parallel wires.
Right.
It's like this strange webbing of interconnected thingies with some occasional spine sticking off them and stuff. So I think it needs a little work.
Probably needs a little work, but you know, it's biological stuff. It's going to be messy. But they're thinking, you know, hey, eventually
there's
we could
pictures,
just
man.
Make batteries at room temperature by pouring stuff into a...
Matt found and is presumably going to post a link to a photo of the eclipse shadow on the Earth.
Cool.
I thought that was incredibly neat.
Does that shadow cover the four corners?
No.
Of the Earth? No.
No, Earth doesn't have corners, man.
No corners?
No, not a one.
But it says in the Bible.
Yeah.
That it has four corners.
I'm sorry.
And
I'm sorry.
Four pillars.
Yeah. And are
right,
curtains,
you
or
need,
is that
you need one pillar per corner. That's disc work.
Oh,
you,
okay.
You have to have a starting corner for each of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And in this corner.
No, for the four winds, sir.
The winds live in the corners of the Earth.
Right.
Right.
Okay. We're definitely killing time here now.
Yeah.
Let's see if there's
some controversial thing we can lash out at.
I brought vast amounts of stuff today, and we've gone through it incredibly quickly.
Yeah.
Because I didn't read the entire story of each of these stories, because it gets dull if
I'm
just sitting
here
reading.
I don't want to do it now.
Somebody's got to have something. Come on, Matt.
I got Catholic group sues San Francisco.
Let's have that.
Yeah, what's that?
A Catholic civil rights group sued the San Francisco Board of Supervisors for allegedly violating the separation of church and state by criticizing the Roman Catholic's position on adoption by gay couples. The Catholic...
What the?
Evidently, if you speak out against religious persecution, that's a violation of the separation of church and state, according to Catholics. The Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights...
Yeah, go ahead.
The Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights sued Monday in federal court after the board's non-binding but strongly worded resolution condemned a plea by the Vatican urging the bishop to stop facilitating adoptions to gay couples. The resolution last month said that it was an insult to San Franciscans when the Vatican, quote, meddles with and attempts to negatively influence this great city's existing and established customs and traditions. The wording conjures up the worst imagery of anti-Catholic bigotry, said Bill Donahue, the Chicago-based league's president. The lawsuit asks a judge to find the board breached the First Amendment prohibition on governments restricting religious activities, an action Donahue acknowledged would be more symbolic than practical.
What did this city council supposedly do that restricted the Catholic Church's religious practices? All they did was say fuck off.
Kinda.
And?
That's persecution.
The resolution that the board passed said that the Vatican was insulting San Franciscans whenever it meddles with and attempts to negatively influence the city's great existing and established customs and traditions.
Yeah.
And the church got pissed off that they said that.
Yeah, but how is that a restriction on their religious practice?
I don't know, but that's what they claim it is.
Oh, man. You know, I have long suspected that, you know, this whole persecution complex in Christianity in particular serves a mimetic function of, like, always giving them something to be upset about.
Oh, hell yeah.
Right? But now, in recent years, I have come to suspect that, as a complementary mimetic mechanism to that persecution complex, is a, you know, driving desire to just act like dicks in order to prompt others to persecute you.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
Because they really freaking asking for it. Well, what, like the
kind of this, what are they?
Hovind with his, or was it Ham? Hovind.
Reverse Munchausen.
With his, not paying the taxes. Why don't you just pay the freaking taxes?
Yeah.
Why get yourself into trouble? Why'd you get yourself into that much trouble? Why poke your nose into the personal affairs of the Schiavo family? Why even do that in the first place? I mean, yeah, sure, I understand you believe you've got some teachings. Not that you can point to them. But you believe you've got some teachings that clearly tell you that you're supposed to get all in other people's business. But it seems to go, like, way farther than that. Like, they're actively trying to fan the flames of their own persecution. Anybody else suspect this?
Maybe. Yeah, well, since absolutely. DeLay claimed that Christians were the most persecuted people, maybe this is all staged.
And who was that dickweed who recently suggested that if you're not getting persecuted, you're not leading a Christian life?
Ooh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I didn't bring that story in.
But that doesn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah.
Churches on every frickin' street corner, and they're claiming they're being persecuted. Can't frickin' believe it.
Yeah.
They got politicians just bending over, backing up to them, presenting like mandrills, you know?
I wasn't going to talk about Tom DeLay, but since you brought him up, anybody been
like
watching? Yeah. First of all, happy he's gone. The thrill is, you know, sort of worn off for me, but...
let the eagle soar.
No, that's somebody else.
I know, but, you know, let's good send-off music for a conservative.
Tom DeLay didn't record any musical numbers.
No, it's a good send-off music for any conservative that gets his ass handed to him.
You want to play that as our outgoing music?
I don't have it.
It's online.
I can't pipe it through.
Oh, okay. But what I was saying was, Tom DeLay, like, just before he threw in the towel.
Yeah.
He was at this, like, War on Christians conference.
Yeah.
Making these claims.
Wow.
That we're after Christians. You know, we're, and to a certain extent, I guess, I think it's about time for us to start admitting, yeah, you're right. We frickin' hate you people. Well, we are deeply annoyed by you people,
uh-huh.
and we oftentimes will say critical things of you because we're sick to freaking death of you screwing up our country and trying to mess with our personal lives.
Hey, and from atheists,
right?
It's just for slandering us for the last 2,000 years.
Yeah, and then
thanks
there's
loads.
That. And there's that. But really, it's just starting to look like it's like they're acting in ways that need to be challenged on purpose in order to get challenged so then they can claim that the challenge is persecution. But, so Tom DeLay was cozying up with these people once again, like within like a week or so before he threw in the towel.
Yeah.
And now the early hints appear to be that he's positioning himself to be sort of a Ralph Reed for the religious right.
I don't know how he's going to do that from jail, but...
The reverse Ralph Reed. Well, he's expecting still not to go to jail, which is nuts. That's nuts in and of itself.
I guess if you've got a handful of delusions, adding one more is...
Yeah.
Who
is
the...
Not put up a good front.
The religious right guy who... his name always reminds me of this talk show host, Sean Hannity. But it's not Sean Hannity. At this conference DeLay was at, was talking about Tom DeLay's sparkling future and saying how God always does his best work right after a crucifixion. Like, turning Tom DeLay into a Jesus.
That's amazing.
I'm going to make a Tom DeLay crucifix. There's got to be a Tom DeLay doll somewhere.
Oh, man.
Yeah, his claims were that there's a war on Christians and value voters. And, of course, he said this in front of Christians and value voters.
Right.
Right.
How convenient.
You guys are being persecuted, and I'm here to protect you. I'll just have to do it from jail for a little while.
That's right. And to prove it, look how much they're persecuting me.
Yeah, they're coming after me, guns a-blazing.
I still want to see him in jail.
I had I kind of tied that into, you know, his false claims of persecution in comparison to real persecution and
that's
the
not persecution, that's prosecution.
Well,
that
study that showed that atheists are the least trusted and most hated,
yeah.
And, you know. And then there
and
was,
we didn't freaking do anything!
Yeah. Well,
we're not going to jail. We are not the ones who are the subject of a indictment.
And you know, you just don't hear about atheists chopping off their infants' arms.
Not, yeah. Certainly not, you know, we might chop off our own arms in, like, you know, desperation if forced to listen to too much church music.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
Gnaw off our own feet.
Yeah, that's a better example. Maybe we were handcuffed. Then we could gnaw off the arms.
So we got like a minute.
A minute.
A minute.
It's a good time to remind everybody that the programs are available for download and podcast.
Correct.
And spread the word to your friends.
It's
and
all on the website,
www.nonprofitsradio.com.
There's all the info you need. Also, our sister show, The Atheist Experience, which is a public access TV show here in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
The audio portion of that is also a podcast. And where do they go for that?
Atheist-experience.com.
Cool.
And also, there's DVDs available from there. So if you don't just want the audio and you want video too, you can get DVDs there.
Hey, cool. And Matt is the host of that show, and I'm on it sometimes.
And actually, you're on it tomorrow.
I'm on it tomorrow? It's tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
Because you're not going to be on it.
No, that's May 7th.
Oh, May 7th.
May 7th, I go to my brother's graduation.
Okay.
And Ashley,
I just got an email from Ashley, and I didn't have time to read it. So, we'll work out our own little organizational problems here, folks. Thanks for listening. We will leave you with Yes doing a roundabout, and see you all again in 2 short weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.